It's a blessing to be here with all of you, especially with our fathers, Buna Anthony, Buna Daniel, and Buna Elijah. Wow, there's a lot of people here. During the sixth hour, Christ said a few things over and over again, and I just want to meditate on that and think about this theme about of choosing the cross. So, the Synoptic Gospels today, in the sixth hour, we read that he said, "Father, if it is your will, take this cup away from me." And of course, he's talking about the cross and the suffering. And then next he says, "Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. And oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me." And the question is, what did Christ mean when he said all these things? St. Gregory of Nyssa says that this really reveals his human nature, which was in him. And of course, naturally, human nature shrinks away from death. And St. Cyril of Alexandria says it wasn't that he feared death, but it just demonstrated the reality of his humanity as a person. And so even though, you know, St. Cyril talks about how although Christ was fully divine, he experienced genuine human emotions. And this plea shows a human's natural aversion to pain and suffering. And that's just a normal thing and something I think all of us would agree with. Nobody wants pain and suffering. But then I'll underline the next part of each one of those verses. "Nevertheless, not my will but yours be done. Nevertheless, not what I will but what you will. And nevertheless, not as I will but as you will." And so then it's clear here that Christ then chooses the cross. And he dominates over his emotions, his suffering, his aversion to suffering. And then later in a different part of the gospel, he says, when he's talking about his life, he says, "No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself." So it becomes something that Christ has chosen freely of himself. And this very purposeful choice is something that we all have to make. And so we see in Christ this aversion to suffering, but yet he chooses the cross. And so today, with God's grace, I'd like to explore this idea of choosing the cross in our life and what it means and what we can learn from Christ this week. We have to choose the cross, and we have to choose it for ourselves, and we have to choose it for others. And this is something that we offer up willingly ourselves. In fact, the first part of the liturgy, as some of you know, is called the offertory. And there we offer bread and wine. In the early church, you used to bring the bread and the wine, as well as the oil and the candles and the incense. People would offer up these things. But the symbolic meaning of the offertory in the liturgy isn't just about offering the bread and the wine, but it's about offering ourselves and offering ourselves completely to ourselves, to Christ and to our neighbors. And so I want to look at some quotes today about how different saints looked at the cross. I want to read you this nice quote. I have lots of them. "For true friends of Jesus, evil does not exist. Everything is turned to good. Hurts, pains, evils done against us are transformed for our spiritual growth." And this is really quite amazing. Evil does not exist for the true friends of Jesus. And then they continue, "Sin is also transformed as an opportunity to trust in God and receive his forgiveness and experience his unconditional love." So they even take it to the next step and say, death itself, sin itself is transformed as this opportunity. And then death itself, the epitome of all that is evil and destructive, is transformed to eternal life. It's really quite amazing that a saint would write something like that. And so here I want to introduce you to a saint. Her name is Saint Therese of Lisieux. Some of you may know she has a church in Chobra, if you've been. She's a Catholic saint, but she wrote a lot about the cross, and I want to share some quotes from her. She contracted tuberculosis when she was 22 years old, and she died when she was 25. And as she was dying in a lot of pain, she used to say to herself, she couldn't imagine that someone could suffer so much. But yet the pain in her life didn't make her, didn't draw her away from Christ. It actually drew her closer to Christ. And she says this, it says, "It has come to this, then I can no longer suffer because all suffering is sweet." I can no longer suffer because all suffering is sweet. We who run in the way of love, and I love the way she writes, we who run in the way of love must never allow ourselves to be disturbed by anything. The words of Job have not entered my heart in vain. Even if God should kill me, I would still trust him. I admit it has taken a long time to arrive at this degree of self-abandonment. She was only 25. But I've reached it now, and it is the Lord himself who brought me here. All suffering is sweet. Nothing disturbs me. And so you start to see this kind of peace, even in suffering, even in pain, even in the cross, and you start to wonder, how do people get to this point? How do people do this? And in fact, this kind of distinction, this kind of choice, this kind of consent to the cross is something we see in Orthodox iconography. When you take a look at this picture, the artist of this picture was clearly trying to depict a very emotional, graphic picture. I sort of chopped the picture in the wrong spot, but his hands are even contorted and they're outstretched in a great deal of pain. His skin is, you know, the wrong color. And the artist here is showing us this death that was just imposed on Christ in a very harsh way. But when you look at Orthodox iconography, you find it very different. You see Christ looking right back at you with love, saying, I do this for you, and I would do this anytime for you. He's choosing the cross. And as we say in the litanies, he was pleased to be lifted up to the cross. So he's now offering this cross in love. And he's looking at you as the sacrifice that he's giving, and he's completely happy and content that he's doing it. And so even in the Orthodox iconography, we see that this important distinction between choosing the cross and having it just be imposed on you as a harsh pain. I want to read you a story about St. Matthew the Poor. It's kind of a little long, but I like the way he wrote it. He says, one time someone asked me, can you tell me what the secret is behind a person becoming a saint or living with God forever, living powerfully with God? Can you explain it to me in a simple phrase, because I'm not an educated man? So Abuna Metta said, I told him, I'll tell you, but you have to understand it well, because I'm going to say it very briefly and more simply than usual. And that's Abuna Metta's way of saying he's usually long-winded. So you'll need to grasp its depth. The secret of holiness and the secret of being with God is a constant siding with God in every situation. A constant siding with God in every situation. Because in every situation a person faces, he's presented with two options: the world or God, the flesh or the spirit, a life according to this age or life according to God. So the secret of holiness depends on whom you side with, and not just once. It's not about siding with God once, getting puffed up and then falling flat. That's not the secret of holiness. The secret is a covenant, steadfastness, and an inner violence of will. Again, I love the way he writes, an inner violence of will. It's almost like this anger from the inside saying, I will always choose God over and over again. That a person sides with God no matter what it costs, even to the point of death. And so we start to see the saints say these things, and you start to get this constant rhythm of how they approach the cross, how they choose God over and over again. He who lives according to God's will has no material or worldly cares. And if he has need of something, he offers himself and the thing to God, which means he prays about it. And then here's the part that really stuns you. And if he does not receive it, he remains as unworried as if he had got what he wanted. Imagine. So you want something, you pray for something, and it doesn't matter whether or not you get it. You're indifferent to the outcome. It's the fact that you prayed about it and you offered it to your Father, and you, and in his words, you remain as unworried as if you had got what you wanted. And then he continues, the soul that is given over to the will of God fears nothing, neither thunder nor thieves nor any other thing. Regardless of what happens, the soul says, such is God's pleasure. If she falls sick, she thinks, this means that I need sickness, or God would not have sent it. Look at the malleability, the consent of this saint, just offering all of these things, saying, if I'm sick, that means God sent the sickness and I accept the sickness. And you have to wonder, how do these people get to this point? And the answer is, you simply desire the same thing that God desires. You choose the thing that God has chosen for you. And so we do this by resigning ourselves to the present moment, being in the moment and saying, I choose this moment right now. And so how do we do this? Saint Teresa has this great quote. She says, I choose all, even suffering. I choose all, even suffering. It's such a very powerful statement, to choose the cross. Resign yourself to the present moment. And I found this wonderful quote. It says, if God desires it to rain, desire the same. If God desires the sun to shine, desire the same. If God desires to make things pleasant, desire the same. If God desires to visit you with hardship and struggle, desire the same. And so when we see Christ choosing the cross and Christ living in the cross, we realize that he's chosen it for me as well. There's no time I could ever say, Christ doesn't get it. You don't know what I'm going through. You don't understand the pain I'm in. Because he's been through that exact same pain. He's been through exactly the things we've been through, and much worse. So how do we get ourselves to this point? How do we get ourselves to be like Christ, who can choose the cross and say, not my will, but your will be done? And do it happily, pleasantly. It turns out you have to start with the little crosses. You can't go to the big crosses right away. You start there, you fall right on your face. And so I found this wonderful quote. It says, in the spirit of conforming to his will, we should accustom ourselves to putting up with all the little daily irritations, such as words said that wound our self-esteem, a fly that annoys us. I'm sure we've all been annoyed by a fly, a mosquito. The bark of a dog, especially the neighbors. Knocking into something as we walk along and stub our toe, a small accidental hurt, a light bulb suddenly going out, a tear in our clothes, a pen that won't write, and I'll add in our modern age, you know, our phone when it doesn't connect to the internet right away. And you send a message and it just does that blue line, and you're like, no. And these are the little things. And what he's basically saying is you have to accept these little things and consent to the little crosses before you can get to the big ones. If you can't handle a pen that doesn't write, you can't handle a disease. You can't handle a husband who isn't exactly what you're looking for. You can't handle a difficult child or a difficult boss if you can't handle the little things. In one way, it is even more important to practice conforming to God's will in these small things than in larger ones, both because they're more frequent and because the habit of supporting them in a Christian spirit prepares us in advance and in a natural manner to show resignation when we have to face serious difficulties. This is, in fact, what fasting is all about, actually. Fasting is me choosing to eat one meal over another meal, to purposefully limit myself so that when I go to limit myself in the bigger things, I've got this strong will that I've created. That's the whole point of the fast. It's to strengthen us. And that's why Christ said to us, you were faithful over a little, I will set you over much. This is exactly the pattern of the Christian life. Start with the small things and try to find peace and contentment in the small things before you try to jump to the big things, or before God sends you the big things to deal with. And the degree to which I handle these little things shows me how much inner peace I have. If I can't handle these little things, then there's something wrong, and I have to go back and I have to check my spiritual life. And Saint Silouan continues, says, here's a sign. If you're distressed over anything, it means you have not fully surrendered to God's will, although it may seem to do that you are living according to his will. Okay, so how do we get there? There's a story about Saint John the Short, or Saint John the Dwarf. They always paint him on a stump, so as you know, he was short. And there's a nice story. It says, Abba John the Dwarf had prayed God to take his passions away from him so that he might become free from care. And then he went and told an old man this, I find myself in peace without an enemy, he said. So imagine this. He's doing what all of us do. Right? What do you do when you have a problem? You pray that God take the problem away, right? This is what we all do. And so this is exactly what St. John did. He says, I'm going to pray and I want to remove these passions so I don't have this problem. And what did God do? He actually did it. And St. John said, I find myself in peace without an enemy. It's a great outcome, right? So what did the old man say? Go beseech God to stir up warfare so that you may regain the affliction and humility that you used to have, for it is by warfare that the soul makes progress. He's like, go quick, go ask God quickly, stir up the warfare. You don't want this kind of peace. We need the cross in our life, right? Because that's where the humility comes from. And he continues, so he besought God, and when the warfare came, he no longer prayed that it might be taken away, but said, Lord, give me the strength for the fight. And this is the perfect model of how we're called to pray. We shouldn't be asking for God to take away our crosses. I mean, you can ask him for whatever you want, but that shouldn't always be our first prayer. The first prayer should be, God, give me the strength for the fight. Because sometimes, you know, there's a disease or something happens, and the first thing you say is, you know, please heal this person. But maybe the better prayer is, please give this person the strength and the grace to get through this disease, to get through this problem. Because we do say, thy will be done, not my will be done. And so sometimes we're too quick to jump to that prayer of, please, you know, the left-hand thief prayer, please get me down from this cross. I don't want to be on the cross. But rather we should give the right-hand thief prayer, which is, I want to be with you. And give me the strength to get through this. So is God happy when we suffer? I'll tell you a story. I'll give you a little background. When my daughter was 16, I wanted her to get a job. You know, we live in Orange County. Things are good. Things are easy. So I wanted to get her hands a little dirty and just, you know, learn what it feels like to stand there for an hour and then get $14 at the end of it. Or 13 after tax. So I said, you know, go get a job. And so she went, she got a job at Chick-fil-A down the street, and I was very excited about that. And so every day she'd come home, and I'd say, how was work? And she says, really tiring, it's really hard. And I'm like, okay, good. And then one day she came back, and I said, how was work? And she's like, it was miserable. She was taking out the trash. There's the big trash bin in the middle of Chick-fil-A, which is called the Whale, by the way, in case you're wondering. And you're supposed to put the thick trash bag in the Whale, but the person before her put the thin trash bag in the Whale. So as she's undoing the trash bag, she's carrying it to the alley in the back, and she wants to throw it in the bin, the whole thing bursts open. And so she has to use her hands and scoop up all this trash, and it's, you know, it's Chick-fil-A, right? It's disgusting, and she's telling me all about it. She had to throw it all in the bin. And I just started giggling. I was like, that's so great. This is the best day of your job. I was so happy. I mean, maybe I'm not a nice person, but I wanted her to learn something. I wanted to learn about hard work. I wanted her to learn what it's like to deal with adversity. And so this was a great opportunity. And so I found this wonderful quote, and what he says is, what if God knows the thing we need first and most is prayer? What if the main object in God's heart is the supplying of our great and endless need, the need of himself? What if the good of all our smaller and lower needs lies in this, that they help to drive us to God? Do you see what he's saying? He's saying maybe all of these little needs that we have all the time, the reason they all exist is because they drive us back to God. Hunger may drive the runaway child home. I love this analogy. Hunger may drive the runaway child home, and he may or may not be fed at once, but he needs his mother more than his dinner. It's such a great, powerful thought. Right? If you have someone who's a runaway, a kid runs away from home, after a day or two he gets really hungry, he wants to go back home. The hunger may have got him back home, but what he really needs is his mom. He needs his parents. And so sometimes God lets us have these little needs in our life, these little difficulties, because the primary purpose is to drive us back to him. Because a lot of times, you know, when life is really good and really easy, we don't pray. We don't
raise our hands, we don't cry, we don't intercess, right? But when things get rough, we come back to our dads. So thinking more about my daughter, what if the reason this trash can blew up was for her to look up to God and say, God, give me some patience. God, help me get through this. God, where are you? And so she needed to choose this cross. She needed to allow herself to let God work in her in this tiny little cross of this trash blowing up. And she needed to choose it joyfully, and she needed to choose it with a smile. And so how do we know that Christ chose the cross joyfully? How do we know he did it without being a victim? How do we know he did it without tears? How do we know? Because he's going to say something tomorrow during Good Friday. He's going to see a bunch of other women weeping for him, and what's he going to say? Don't weep for me. I'm not a victim. I'm choosing this cross joyfully. In fact, in Hebrews it says, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. And we even say this in the hymn Phaethovimph, right? Who was pleased to be lifted up unto the cross. So Christ didn't go to the cross angry or bitter. This isn't like, you know, when you're a parent and you have to take your kid to soccer and piano and all this other stuff, and you're driving around. You do it, but you're not really happy about it, right? You just kind of do it because you have to do it. But this wasn't that. This was choosing it joyfully with love. He didn't just tolerate it. So I want to think about, how do we learn from our trials and our suffering? How do we learn from the crosses that are in our life? How do I practically choose the cross? So what enables us to overcome a cross and to get through it positively is not some magic wand, but a right attitude, the attitude towards the cross. How do I move positively forward through a trial? The first thing you have to do is you have to accept it. You can't rebel against it. You can't push back against it. Many times when a cross comes in our life, we fight it. We resist it. We argue. We get angry. We go through the stages of grief. But the first thing the saints tell us is to be malleable, to consent, to let God do what he needs to do. And this sometimes takes a lot of time. Sometimes it takes years. There are people who are struggling for years because of a disease or because someone passed away, fighting with God and not allowing themselves to consent. And that's okay. Sometimes it does take a long time, but you have to set off on this path of acceptance. Start down the path. And this isn't fatalism or resignation, it's consent. So I wanna give us some practical tips on what to say when we go through a cross. The first thing is, these are the wrong questions to ask. Why has this happened to me? What did I do wrong to deserve this? What mistake did I make? What did I do to God to deserve this suffering? What's the explanation of it all? What's causing it? How long will it go on? What's the quickest way out? Whose fault is it, my own or other people's? Who's to blame? These kind of questions, and I'm sure the Agunas get these all the time, explain to me why God's doing this. Why is God letting me suffer? Why is this happening? These questions don't have an answer. These questions lead us down a spiral of being a victim, and that don't ever really have us coming out positive, but rather coming bitter and hardened and hateful and angry and resentful. And we can spend our whole lives wallowing on these questions, insisting on an answer, going from clergy to clergy, looking for the right answer, and never finding one. And especially when we start to look at questions like, who is to blame? I mean, this is a natural question, right? Whenever I have a problem, I have to identify what's wrong, I have to figure out how to fix it, and I want to move on. But it's easy to persuade myself that someone else is the problem. I can have a scapegoat. And we all look for someone to blame. And then we start blaming and accusing other people. We start accusing life. We say, I'm just unlucky. And then we accuse other people. We accuse God. Sometimes we're a victim of God. and God did this to me. And then sometimes the worst accusation is we accuse ourselves and we hate ourselves and we blame and have all this guilt on ourselves and saying, I'm such a bad person and that's why this happened. So we have to be very watchful and careful here not to go down this path of finding blame, being a victim. And although it's perfectly understandable to ask these questions, it's justifiable, try to resist as best you can. One of the saints says, learn that your greatest pains and trials today will one day become your greatest delight. When will this happy time arrive? Only God knows. It will be when he pleases, for he knows when the time that's most suitable and best for us. And so sometimes this kind of consent, allowing God to do things, is scary. This wonderful quote I came across, though difficult to admit, many of us are a little afraid of God. That is, we are fearful of where he may want to lead us. His plans and directions for our lives may not be where we want them to go. We want to love God, but keep him at a safe distance. And we can all experience this. There are parts of our lives we just don't want God involved. There are parts of our lives that are closed off to God. This is my part. We want to keep God at a safe distance, fearing to relinquish control of our lives to be led only by his will. We expect and are happy to see God in church services like this one, activities, quiet time, meditation. We seek to limit his actions and presence to holy matters. However, we are resistant when God leads us, often against our will, to see and experience him in difficulties, sufferings, in the unexpected and the most mundane activities of our life. And this really hit me, that we're sometimes afraid of God and where he'll lead us. And I know this is true with so many of us. St. John Chrysostom has this wonderful analogy. He says, he's talking about a blacksmith, and he says, wait till the end and you will see the outcome of events. Don't fuss, don't worry. Imagine someone who is not of the trade watching a blacksmith start melting down gold and mixing in ashes and straw, right? So you can imagine the scene. You have a bunch of gold and this guy takes a blowtorch and he starts burning the gold. And you don't know what you're doing, right? You're not a blacksmith, you're like an accountant or something. If he does not wait till the end, he will think that the poor piece of gold is going to be destroyed. Yet the blacksmith does this to make the piece pure gold. And so this is really the story of our lives, right? If you're this piece of gold, what are you saying right now? Ow, right? This hurts. There's a guy with a blowtorch on me, right? But what St. John Chrysostom is saying is that that process is purifying. And it's important to wait till the end to see how it ends and to understand it. All right, so what are the right questions to ask? The key here is we have to start focusing on the right attitude. Not why did God do this, but how am I supposed to respond? So focus on the right questions. What does God want of me here? What is the right way to live through this? Which part of the gospel am I called by this situation to put into practice now? What acts of faith and hope, what progress and love am I being asked to make today? What good can be accomplished in this situation that depends on me? Without fretting anymore about what other people should do or should have done, we look to our own responsibilities. What good, depending on me, can I do today that nobody else can do? And it is right and necessary to ask these questions when a trial comes. And in fact, all of these are the same question. And they always have an answer. And that's the beauty of these questions. There is an answer. There is something you can do. There is a part of the gospel you can learn. There is a part of me that can die to my own ego and my own selfishness. Even in the worst situations, in the face of the most traumatic injustices, we can discover a good to be accomplished, a step to be taken in our personal progress, and ultimately, that's what counts. And so after going around and around, we can finally capitulate. We can give in. We can consent. We can accept the situation as it is without trying to understand what God's trying to do. Because once you go into that place, it's a very difficult place. Even, you know, the life of St. Anthony, when St. Anthony himself asked God and said, why is it that some people are rich and some people are poor and some people die young and some people live a long time and some people are mean and they have a lot of money and the nice people don't have money? And God said to him, what? Mind your own business. You're not supposed to understand this stuff. All right, so I want to share with you my favorite prayer, whatever prayer. Whatever you want, Lord, I want. Whatever you choose, I choose. Whatever you say, I'll do. Whatever you give, I'll receive. Whatever you withhold, I'll accept. Whatever you plan, I rejoice in. Whatever, Lord, whatever. Can you guys say it with me? Whatever you want, Lord, I want. Whatever you choose, I choose. Whatever you say, I'll do. Whatever you give, I'll receive. Whatever you withhold, I'll accept. Whatever you plan, I rejoice in. Whatever, Lord, whatever. And of course, does this sound familiar? It's sort of where we started in the garden in the sixth hour. This is really the prayer of Christ, the whatever prayer. So the final thing I want to talk about is carrying the cross with other people. So everything we've talked about till now is my cross and my difficulty, but we all know we're a community that's centered around Christ. We're the body of Christ, and we're there to support each other. As St. Paul says, we weep with those who weep, and we rejoice with those who rejoice. So I wanted to give some tips on how to carry the cross with other people, because sometimes we don't always do it the best way. Don't make up meaning and reasons for other people's crosses. It's true that every cross has a meaning, but we can't invent one, even if it sounds really, really spiritual. Especially when we're on the outside. Sometimes we're too quick and too superficial in interpreting events, and we start to tell people, this is what God's thinking. And you have to realize, as soon as you start a sentence with, let me tell you what God's thinking, you're probably wrong. Right? So don't do that, because really you're not God, and you don't know. Right? Everyone, you know, I always loved it during COVID when people would come up to me and say, let me tell you why God gave us COVID. And I'm like, are you really going to finish that sentence? You're going to tell me why God gave us COVID. Right? And so we see this example even in the book of Job, right? In the book of Job, when the trials first hit Job, he was fine in the beginning, right? He said, naked I came out of my mother's womb, naked I shall return. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He said all the right things. And then his four friends showed up, and they started doing what? Defending God and telling him he's bad, and he must have done this, and this is why God did it. And then he got really upset, and he did not like that. And that turned him, and he went the other direction because of his four friends. God doesn't need a lawyer. Don't be God's lawyer. Help others discover God's plan for them in that moment. So that list of questions that we should ask, help them get there. What part of the gospel can you do? How can you respond to this? Right? How can you dig deeper? Encourage them not to shut themselves off from God and lose hope. This is the death spiral. When people start going into that victim mindset, losing hope, losing all sense of reality, this is where we as a community really have to rescue people from prisons and dungeons, as we say in the litany of the sick, right? These are the prisons and dungeons that people are trapped in that we have to keep them out of. Next, we don't always have the answers. We have to consent that we, in a spirit of humility, that we don't really know everything. And we don't know what's happening and why. And sometimes we find ourselves arguing with people and telling them, well, this is why, and this is what you have to do, and this, do it like this. And people push back against us because we usually don't feel their pain. And unfortunately, our ego gets involved and we start arguing with people and trying to beat them down and convince them that we're right and they're wrong. And that's how the ego gets involved. So don't let your ego get involved. And then finally, remember that our trials help us be more compassionate for others. Sometimes the most compassionate people are the people who've been through a sin themselves, right? You can sit with an alcoholic and you can get really frustrated that they keep drinking and you can't understand why you don't just quit. I don't understand why you can't just quit. But another person who's an alcoholic can. And they understand how hard it is and what it's like to be trapped in that addiction. And so sometimes our pain becomes the source of comfort for other people down the road. All right, final thought. This is a wonderful quote. We'll end with this. I know it's late. I'm sorry. Sufferings gladly borne. And so before I read the quote, I want you to think of Christ tonight when you read this quote. Sufferings gladly borne for others convert more people than sermons. How many things did Jesus say on the cross? Not much. He said 7 phrases. And here we have the cross that's been talked about. And how many sermons have been given on the cross? How many millions of sermons? How many thousands of books have been written on the cross? But Christ on the cross was what? Silent. He gladly borne sufferings for others. True charity consists in putting up with all one's neighbor's faults, never being surprised by his weakness, and being inspired by the least of his virtues. Why should we defend ourselves when we are misunderstood and misjudged? Let us leave that aside. Let us not say anything. It is so sweet to let others judge us in any way they like. O blessed silence, which gives so much peace to the soul. May the Lord bless us tomorrow and as we continue the rest of Holy Week and lead to the resurrection. And may we learn, all of us, this beautiful lesson of Christ, of choosing the cross and choosing the little things and allowing God to work in us and teaching us patience and forgiveness and glory.